SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races on this damp Tuesday, and Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Lamenting, I started the show, referenced you. I said this rain. I mean, it's. You hate talking about it, but I mean, it's become ridiculous.
It sounds like you're losing your mind, Steve.
I am. I'm telling you. I looked out the window and this morning at 4:30 and I
think it's going to stop very soon. According to
no, it's not. It's never going to stop. It's not going to stop. I sighed loudly and Tina said, "What's wrong?" I said, "It's
not a trainer or owner
again.
Trying to get his horses ready for a race or her horses ready for
that's
a race."
That's what I talked about. I talked about that to start the show.
In races, we just want to bet on them. They're paying all the bills too. It's bad for all of us. It's bad for Naira too.
Yep.
Sucks. What are you gonna do? You know, it's like anything in life. You can let it get you down or not.
Well,
the handicap 4 or 5 extra races a day.
Well, that's so, it. That's
all about me too.
Well, everyone loves that, and of course, you love answering the questions when people ask if races are going to come off.
I think people have even gotten tired of asking the questions. I think people have even gotten worn out from that. It's remarkable.
I brought up what you just said. In fact, I mean, it was one thing when we knew Breeders' Cup, the races are going to be on the turf no matter what, and so you just have to make the mental adjustment and figure out, think about the, you know, adjusting to yielding or softish turf. But when you have to look like tomorrow, we've got a nice carryover going into what looks like an attractive sequence, and three of the races are scheduled for turf, and so you have to do both. So it's like handicapping.
It's not that big a deal.
Well, it's like handicapping.
You know,
nine
some races you wait until they see who's running. Some
right.
You just look and just try to guess. I don't know. Yeah, it's disappointing. You know, it is. It sucks. I mean, tomorrow's that expensive horse that Peter Brandt bought at Tattersall, right? Marchelier.
That's tomorrow. That's tomorrow. It's the third race tomorrow.
Yeah, I think they paid a lot of money for that horse. Look it up. I feel like they paid over $2 million, but 2 million guineas or something. I should look it up, but I think they did. Do you know what it's named for?
De Marchelet. I do not.
Anybody who's watched the movie The Devil Wears Prada should know, right?
Sure.
Doesn't that character get mentioned quite often in the movie? He's a photographer, right? Like a fashion
photographer. Oh, look at you. They're well done.
You know the other thing you can do to look things up? You can go to Google.
That's true, but hadn't really got to the name.
And I think Maggie's actually the one who said this in the meeting one day. Brattata, it's actually Brattata, right? It's a Lichtenstein painting, I think. I mean, a lot of Rance horses were named from people. You know, he had a lot of horses, like, going way back, like Twombly and Leo Castelli, and I remember Leo Castelli made his debut. You know, Leo Castelli was an art dealer, and in Belmont, and I believe it was Leo Castelli, and I'm not going to say who the person was, but somebody who was one of the regulars had singled him in the pick six. He's one of those, you know, Brandt Jolly firsters that everybody heard was good. And single in the pick six, and the horse ran. He ran second, Leo Castelli, I believe, in his debut. I'm probably wrong about this, but I feel like Quick Call might have won the race, but I'm probably wrong about it.
Wow.
And I have to look up a year. It's probably the right time, so it's possible. And I remember him saying after Leo Castelli lost, "I bet this horse stays undefeated, and you'll never lose again." It cost the pick six. He had 5 or 6. And I think Leo Castelli won, like, you know, a slew of races in a row, like 6 or 8 or something. And at one point, he was one of the favorites, I believe, for the Derby. I think his first loss after that was the Flamingo to Tallinnum, but I could be wrong. All of that could probably be looked up, right?
Absolutely, but he
this was around 88, 89, 87, 86, 87, 88, somewhere in there, late 80s. Get Leo Castelli's lifetime past performances.
You know, did you hear, did you happen to hear the interview with Brandt after Sister Charlie's win?
No, I did not.
He said something really interesting that I thought.
Like, he seems like a very nice, I mean, I've talked to him occasionally. He's always extremely nice. Interesting guy.
Brittany Ertin said to him, why did you stay away from the game so long? And he said, you know what? He goes, I don't know why. And I thought that that was interesting. I mean, he didn't, you know, say something convoluted or say my interests were elsewhere. He said you could tell he was answering, saying that he was sorry that he had stayed away. That's the impression I got.
Well, he's come back in a very big way.
Yeah,
and you know, I think it's something that gets overlooked. When you have a trainer like Chad Brown, who's had a lot of success, and obviously there's a lot of, you know, we hear sort of what I think are unfound criticisms. He has too many horses. Problem is he wins too much. Not that he has too many horses. Nobody ever complains about people who have a lot of horses that don't win that often. And you think about an owner like Peter or Seth Klarman, who have gotten, you know, Seth's obviously been around for a long time in the game, but you think of the success he's had with Chad in the last few years, and you see them as getting very involved and buying a lot of horses and being involved in the game, and it's good for the ecosystem of the game when owners do well and owners are happy, and this is something that's happened with Chad Brown's owners. I mean, obviously you have Sal Kuhlman, who's front and center all the time. And Sal, while he employs a lot of trainers, he started with Chad. And a lot of his bigger successes with horses that he had, not just ones he bought into, obviously the ones he buys into, they stay with other trainers, but were with Chad Brown. And, you know, and look at Peter Brandt and how much he's gone into the game and how much he's invested and the impact it's had, right? With Sister Charlie had been running in these big races over the last year plus, if Peter hadn't bought her and hadn't brought her here and given her to Chad. No, she wouldn't. So I think that gets lost in the rush to sort of criticize for whatever reason it is. And it's important to have strong owners and owners that are happy and owners that want to continue to invest in the game. Because the opposite is people who don't do well and they walk away. For whatever reasons, they walk away. So I think it's a very good example of I mean, obviously, it's an extreme example, and extreme examples aren't the only examples, but, you know, these are owners that have been successful, and as a result, it's been much better for the whole, to use the word again, ecosystem of the game.
Yeah. No, well, no, we've discussed that, too, and that's a really well-made point. The active return, and in fact, there was a nice piece about Seth. You mentioned Seth Klarman. There was a nice piece in TDN.
I liked all the quotes from Seth in that piece.
This week,
there weren't any.
Yeah. and I did pull up Leo Castelli since he came up, and he
lost his first start at Belmont, correct?
He did. He did lose his at 3-1, and
who won the race? Do we know? It wasn't Quick Call. Like, for some reason,
no.
It was, but I don't think it is.
Flying Granville.
Okay.
Flying Granville. But then he won. He broke his maiden. He was away at that point until January at Hialeah, and broke his maiden early in January at Hialeah, going 7, then an allowance win. This was with Kruger, 3rd in the Flamingo.
He was 3rd, okay. But he didn't have as many wins. Did Tallinnum win that Flamingo?
He did, and Crypto Clearance was second.
Yeah.
And because his name came up so prominently yesterday, in fact, with conversations with both Johnny D and with Dick Girardi, he also was vanquished twice by Bet Twice in the Fountain of Youth.
You know, it's funny that even like when you think of that incredible crop, which included Bet Twice and Crypto and, you know, and obviously now Sheba and so many other good horses, Polish Navy and
Capote.
And Capote was not an impressive member of that crop. He never won another race after the Breeders' Cup.
Gone West?
Gone West was in that group. Java Gold was in that group. I loved Gone West.
Chocolate One?
What?
Chocolate One.
Yeah, I don't think Chocolate One is one that comes to too many people's minds as one of the top members of that crop. Though he was a nice horse.
He was a nice horse.
There were some very, very good horses in that group.
Yes.
I feel like Track Baron, not Track Baron, was a few years before, but, you know, Talon must have gotten hurt after the Flamingo, now that I think about it, because I don't have any memory of him running going forward after those races. He probably must have gotten hurt. And Leo Castelli, I don't think Leo Castelli ran that many times. Like, how many more times did he run after that?
Like five. He after the Fountain, Bet Twice wins the Fountain of Youth, and then Leo Castelli goes to the Bluegrass, which Ali Sheba wins.
Well, Ali Sheba disqualified, and War got put up, right?
Exactly. And, in fact, Leo Castelli actually gets put up to second.
It was a very close photo, right?
It was about a half length between the three of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then
did he run
the Derby.
He
did. He was seventh, beaten four lengths.
Well, that's not bad.
Under Jacinto. Jacinto picked him up out of nowhere.
Jacinto rode for Leroy. Jolly lot.
There you go. And then he wins the Peter Pan, preparing for the Belmont.
I was probably there. I'm sure I was there.
He beat Gone West.
Gone West. Do you know why Gone West ran the Belmont?
No. Why?
Because he would have been six in a row for Woody, and Woody had nobody else to run. My memory of it. And, you know, they knew he couldn't get a mile and a half on a flatbed. He was a wonderful horse, Gone West, let me tell you. He was an incredible horse. I loved him. He won the Gotham. He got beaten at the wire by Gulch in the Wood Memorial. I can still remember being in Aqueduct that day. I was not at the Gotham, because I was at Dead Shows, I think at Worcester. But I bet Gone West, if he'd eight and change. Sloppy, I'm almost sure. I want to say Gone West was like second to Java Gold in the Whitney. My memory of what he did after that is pretty vague. But I know he was definitely in the Whitney with Java Gold.
And I may have been, that's one I may have been at. And in fact, the quick call comes up here, Andy, because Quick Call beat Castelli a half a length, three quarters of a length in an allowance at Saratoga.
So I was right somewhere. So that's
yes.
why.
That's why. That's why.
Brain had him yes. in there somewhere. Really, Quick Call beat him somewhere. That's amazing.
And then his career ended in the Jerome. He was fourth in the Jerome, and that was it.
Who won the Jerome? What was that? Wait a second. What year was that? 87 or 87?
87.
88 was Evening Chris. So the Jerome in 87? Hang on. Oh, because the Fleet won it in 86, right?
No, Fleet did win it.
Oh, Fleet is the Fleet Stack Pack. Stack Pack was second.
You go.
The Fleet won.
Look at you.
That was the Fleet's first race in this country, I want to say. So Fleet did win it in 87. Wow. Okay. I remember
that was his last.
I was waiting for that backpack, who had lost for the first time in Saratoga. That was Shug and the Phippses. And he was a big price, Stack Pack. And the Fleet was incredible. Fleet was a great talent, who had the misfortune of not having one of the better riders, who probably cost him the Breeders' Cup when Gulch won, as good as Gulch was. And of course, Gulch beat him in the Mad Mile, too. I think there was a big difference between his rider and his Cordero.
Now, and
Fleet's a horse that's probably been forgotten over time that shouldn't be forgotten. Phil England trained him.
I love the horse, the Time Forgot storylines.
Fleet lost the Meadowlands Cup by a nose to Creme Fraiche. A mile and a quarter is a long way from Fleet. I mean, he was. Let me tell you something. Fleet, you should get his PPs up. Fleet was a monster. He was dead last top of the stretch in the Leaders' Cup sprint. Finished third, Gulch.
Yep. In 80, that was at Churchill. That was the Churchill Breeders' Cup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, he's a cool horse. He was a
big, beautiful horse. He was a really good looking horse.
He could go. I mean, he tried.
He won the mile and a quarter. He got beaten in the nose by Creme Fraiche.
Well, and then they tried him in the Breeders' Cup Classic too.
Yeah, that was out at Hollywood Park.
That's at the beginning. That would have been...
You know, the night before I flew out, this is a true story. The night before I flew out to the Breeders' Cup, this came up the other day, so I'm thinking of it. I flew out to Hollywood where, by the way, speaking of Peter Brantley Rajali, a horse, I want to say his name is White Mischief, but I think it's the wrong name. A horse be waiting to make its debut on the turf, ran in like the Miasque of the Generous, the two-year-old turf stakes, as a mate. They shipped it out. And he had a huge pedigree, and he paid like $35. I think it paid for a weekend of losers. But the night before I went to the Breeders' Cup, I had dinner with a friend of mine at Indochine, which still exists, actually, but it was a very, very trendy place in the city. And it wasn't that expensive. We used to go there a lot. And there's always a lot of, like, celebs and people there. It was a good people-watching place. And I was having dinner with a friend of mine, and the tables are very close to each other. And I was just talking to her and not really paying attention. I was actually being a good guest as opposed to my normal bad behavior. And we left, and she said to me, well, at least you got to sit next to the little whatever she was. And I said, what are you talking about? And she said, what do you mean? You don't know who you were sitting next to? And I said, no, I don't know who I was sitting next to. Why? And she said, come on, you don't know who you were sitting next to? And I was sitting next to Madonna for the entire evening. And it was the time when she was married to Sean Penn and he was in jail, right? Because he punched a photographer or something.
Yeah.
And apparently my friend was much more interested in Madonna's conversation. Mine, hard as that is to believe. So she was listening as Madonna was talking about how she was leaving Sean Penn, the letters he was sending her from jail and stuff like that. And I never, never noticed her. I remember seeing the person she was talking to was some guy, and I remember some name drop, you know, like hearing like the names of actors or actresses from them, but it never really interested me that much.
I don't have nearly as many of these kinds of stories as you.
Well, that's not really. I mean, the other stories I know are usually seeing celebrities. You know,
yeah,
it's New York. I mean, you see celebrities. Especially depending on where you go for dinner. You know, but that's true, and I never saw her.
We had an anniversary dinner for my parents at Coco Pazzo.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like Coco Pazzo. That was
great. The big time. And so we're sitting there, and it took me a couple of minutes to realize, and I didn't realize it because of her. I realized it because of him. Lyle Lovett and Julia Roberts were at the caddy corner to us, and you know, she was frumpy dressed, but he stands out in any crowd. And that's the best I can do.
Oh, I can do. Well, you know, that lunch with Freddie, right? That famous lunch with Freddie. The infamous Freddie.
Well, Freddie was the celebrity, right? There wasn't any...
We were having lunch at Lux one day, and it was like a Monday in July. And I know it was because I saw one of the people's restaurant playing in the celebrity version of the All-Star game that night. So it was like All-Star weekend, which is a pretty quiet time in the city, you know? It's hot. And it's right before we went to Saratoga. And we were having lunch, and I think there was like, it happened to be a very quiet day, and there was maybe one or two other tables being taken, which is rare. And Spielberg walked in, which wasn't unusual because I'd see him there with his family. And shortly after him, Larry David came in, which is unusual because I had never seen Larry David anywhere. And Matthew Broderick came in after that. None of these people were together. And him I've seen a lot. And Steve Martin came in after that. All these people were at different tables. Steve Martin came in after that. Him I'd never seen anywhere other than, you know, TV. And then John Hamm came in. And this week, Mad Men was big, came in. And it was John Hamm that I saw in the Celebrity Game that night. He was probably having lunch before he went to the airport or wherever people like that fly from. And it was so funny. And Freddie was there. And it was so funny because even the waitress, and they never said anything, and they had seen a lot of celebrities, said, wow, what's going on here? Like, it was really outrageous.
Just a summer day, too, because summer, nobody's right, in the city right. In the summer.
Right, exactly. That's why it was so funny. That was another reason it was funny, right? It was just sort of odd, right? It was almost like a wax museum. And, of course, nobody was bigger than Freddie.
No, they all came to the table and
Freddie,
exactly.
Right.
They were sending Freddie drinks, undoubtedly. Oh my God!
Anything going on in racing?
I will run one thing by you because I just had Jack Sisterson on and. We talked about that Oxy lady, and I don't. You and I just briefly touched on her. They're looking
in that race. It was one of the
96.
It was really hard to talk about. He trained her.
Yes, it's his first graded stake win.
He's somebody's assistant, right?
He was for
Everybody.
Doug O'Neill.
He was Doug O'Neill, right?
He walked horses for Todd.
From New York. He walked
Hots for Todd, and then he worked for Eddie Keneally because, of course, everybody that comes from the UK has to work for Eddie Keneally.
Right.
I think it's in somewhere in the immigration laws.
Well, listen, Tom. When Tom Morley was working for Eddie Keneally, Eddie Keneally won a lot of races in New York. Seriously,
mm-hmm.
It was a time when Eddie had a big stable in New York, and he was really winning races. Somebody else trained. Oh, Brendan Walsh trained for him, right?
Uh-huh.
Brendan's a good trainer.
Yes, he is. Absolutely.
Thanks,
no, they all, and there's somebody else, actually. There's somebody else that's hot,
Ben worked for Christoph. No, I don't know. Maybe he worked for Eddie as well. Really
I think he worked for Eddie, too.
Must work for somebody besides Christoph to be winning all the time.
How about? By the way, how about? Did you see Christoph on Saturday? You were off Sunday, but you were there Saturday.
You know, I went to see Christoph on Saturday. He had a horse in the first race, and I thought he'd be watching the film theater. And I actually spent a lot of energy to walk from my office towards the film theater, and he was not there. And I was hoping to spend some quality time with him. I was very hurt.
I'm gonna carry that anger
around for a while.
He was wearing like a burlap bag. It was
his
shocking.
Clothing choice at the time could use some. I'm surprised that Valerie lets him out of the house. Given the quality of the choices that Charlotte and Valerie make, it's really surprising that Christoph is allowed out of the house sometimes. Those pants, horrifying. But he makes up for his great personality.
He does. He does. Well, he was. You know, I don't think I ever discussed this with you when he was on the broadcast on the ARC broadcast from Belmont.
I did a podcast with him.
It was wonderful. He was terrific.
Christoph's great. He is.
No, that was really enjoyable. Him with the Wolf. He was on with the Wolfman.
Yeah, he was on with Greg. Yeah. Hmm.
A couple
Better
of final notes.
It was early in the morning.
Exactly, it was like 9 o'clock in the morning. You weren't going to schlep in. We should mention the Stewart Manor win for Regal Glory, Paul Pompa. It's an important homebred for him, and Chad. She's 2 for 2. An Animal Kingdom out of Mary's Follies and Highway Star.
Mary's Follies name for is that Paul's mom? Mary.
It was his mother. Yes, his late mother.
Yeah, that's. Sweet. Paul's great.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
That's an important win
between that horse and the runner-up.
Yeah, it was a good race.
Mm-hmm.
And she got a 77. And then Highway Star, I don't know if she's retiring or what's going on, but third race in 3 weeks.
For this weekend?
There might be. She ran well, though.
Yeah, she did. She did. There are nice horses. Yeah, she's a nice horse. A nice horse. I know they're supposed to be breeding her next year, but I guess they could bring her back in the Gopher Juan on Cigar Mile Day.
Well, that's not impossible, I would imagine.
Mendelsohn coming for the Cigar Mile? I think I read that.
Is that right? I thought somebody.
It's a very smart race for a good race for him.
Well, in fact, had a discussion last night with a prominent owner that is weighing some decisions, Clark versus Cigar Mile.
For what horse?
Different horses.
Okay.
Yeah, but
whatever.
Yeah, we'll see.
Cigar Mile's a better stallion making race.
Yes, I get it.
It is.
No, I hear you. I don't have any.
It's a big win for Connect. Speaking of Paul Pompa,
yep,
very important win for his career in getting a stallion and becoming a stallion. That race, you know, a very big win for him. A good horse.
Yeah, very much.
I guess this past year was his first year as a stallion, right? Because he got hurt too late to stand the year before.
Right.
So they were bred last year, so we born this coming year. Okay.
Yes, after so January
starting. Start in 2020.
Correct.
It's a long process, that whole thing, you know?
It is. It is. It's very much so. And, it takes patience and brood mares. In fact, you know, I referenced the sale results. You know, for those of you that haven't looked, take a look at the results. You know, fairly far down, you'll see lots of mares selling for what seems like small money, but these are the mares that are going to fill out the rosters for all these new stallions. And that's why, you know, when you see this Keeneland sale going on and on, that's why they got to fill
racing
up.
Racing takes patience, Steve.
Yes, it
Every
does.
Every part of racing takes patience.
Yep. You're right. You're absolutely right.
For a game where the actual contests are very short, the actual game takes great patience.
Well, we're going to have to be a little bit more patient to get to December 1st. After Thanksgiving, you mentioned the Cigar Mile, and we've got the Demoiselle and the Gopher Juan, the Remsen, of course, to look forward to. But before that, there's actually a lot of good, you know, the whole holiday fest period.
Especially if it doesn't rain.
Yeah, if it doesn't rain, we'll have some fun because the Long Island and what else?
Well,
there's
like
the
$3 million race this year or something, right?
$400,000.
Up the purse to some
$400,000.
Good purse for that race.
Well, and the Discovery. On the main, and this is all start. Holiday Fest starts on the 22nd.
Discovery was always opening day at Aqueduct. I always liked it.
That's right. That's right. That
goes back. Take a train out from work to Discovery. Who beat Street Cry in the Discovery? There's your question. Street Cry made his return in the Discovery and lost to
a year?
Future Grade 1 winner.
What year would this be?
Well, I don't know, Steve. Why don't you figure out when Street Cry ran? I'm going to say late 90s.
I would say even later than that.
No, maybe. I don't know. Oh, when did Street Cry, when did, what's his name, win the, when did Street Cry run second in the Whitney to left court, left bank?
That's got to be about 2000.
Well, it's going to be 99.
All right. Well, I'm gonna surprise you with the correct answer.
Okay, we looked it up.
I did, and
well, that's
I'm sorry.
I was
going to
give you all sorts of hints. He was gray. He beat Funny Side.
Well, all you had to say was Pat Kelly and that and Joe and Mary Grant and TJ.
That's right,
and
Joe Grant.
Evening Attire.
That's right. He bet $130.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did.
Yep. I had bet him in four previous races. Fact. In fact, I believe his prior race was on the turf at Belmont, where I want to say he lost unaccounted for. Is that true?
Unbelievable. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think he lost on Catterford. That would be too late. I saw Catterford make his debut in Florida.
You know what's funny? You know who was in that race that came up weeks ago, sadly, because of Rick Violette? Was Free of Love, was third.
Was he really?
Yep.
Free Cry was an entry, I think. Was he?
I don't know. Let me see. I don't think so.
No? Okay, maybe not. Maybe one of them was an entry.
No. I tell you what, though. This race had all kinds of things happening.
Why?
Well, Bob Kamak had a horse in here, too.
Wow.
Oof. That was very sad. Hey.
Free of Love is that race, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're having a memorial for Rick.
A week from Monday, the 26th.
Yeah, I'm going to be in Saratoga, actually, visiting my mom, so I won't be there. I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And did you know Mike Muzio at all?
You know, I knew Mike. Of course I knew Mike. I mean, he worked in Nyra for all those years.
Yeah.
I saw him in the racing office a million times. I always talked to Mike. I know. I heard he died. It's very sad.
Yeah, very sad. I mean,
he's a young guy, Mike.
64 years old.
Right, as I say, he's barely 60, right?
Yep. They'd gone to retire. They had a house. It's been a tough year on this front.
It's always a tough year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been acute. It just feels like it's been literally every couple of weeks. There's another, it's been relentless. Don't forget, I mean, I have to chronicle them, and so it feels like there's been twice as many this year as usual, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's correct.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, I'm sure you have a much more interesting guest coming up.
Well, Tony Black, actually, is going to come in a couple days early here because I'm off on Thursday, a rare day away.
Really?
Yes.
Well, we won't discuss what you're doing, but I'm sure it's really interesting. I'm going to go. I've got some stuff to do here.
Well, we'll certainly be interested tomorrow because that's a good sequence tomorrow, and hopefully it stays largely intact.
For a minute,
go ahead. A couple of
my picks are on the website.
Cool.
Turf and dirt. I didn't make dirt picks for the seventh race. I figured I'd wait.
You know, the revelation, by the way, the revelation that you had at some point earlier this year, that's been the most important thing that happened all year, was you realized you could put turf and dirt picks for these occations, and it seems to have made a big difference in your life.
Stuff.
Well, you're much
not,
you're
what?
You're much more agreeable than ever since that happened. You've been.
I'm a very agreeable guy. I got a bad rap.
You've got.
I'm far nicer than people think I am.
I know. I happen to know that, and but you know.
You know, it's TV. It's an act.
It's an act, exactly. If you knew him, he's a teddy bear, everybody.
Would people prefer boring?
They might. I guess they do. I don't know. I don't know.
You know, do they prefer those shows where it's just boring and it's no fun? It's horse racing. It's supposed to be fun.
And they're supposed to have opinions. You're supposed to have firm opinions.
I'll tell you who in sports... He's not as prolific with his ridiculous pictures of food that the Mig is, but Charles Oakley on Twitter has got some pretty goofy pictures of food up. If you want to, he could be like the basketball equivalent of Richie.
I haven't followed Oak.
I think that Richie and Oak should have like a Richie puts more stuff up, but you know, Oak puts some good stuff up at times.
Well, Richie's like he is farm to table. That should be his should be his new nickname, not the Mig.
Farm to table.
He's FTT, farm to table.
He'd like that.
Yeah, he would.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks, Andy. Bye. Oh my God, what you just heard, this the nonsensical 30 minutes. He and I have those conversations all the time. We'll take a break here. Tony Black's going to come in. He's going to tell you about his relationship with Walter Reese, who passed, hasn't gotten as much notice in the papers and the trades, but really a big figure, and a big figure in Tony's life in particular. And we'll also revisit the situation involving Odonis Acuna. You know, Philly had an incident with an exercise rider, not just the Flores sadness and tragedy, but they lost an exercise rider as well. At Churchill, nobody at Churchill could remember. They said they just said decades. Nobody can specifically remember a fatality. And just like a lightning strike. Tony Black joins us next. Todd Pletcher later. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda. The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary. Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
You say you stand by your man. Tell me something.
We're back at the races coming up on 15 to the top of the hour. And we'll talk in about an hour to Todd Pletcher. Have got a stack of things that got to get to with Todd. We haven't talked to him in ages. Tony Black is joining us a couple of days early because, as I mentioned to Andy, I'm off on Thursday. We'll give you the best of. And, in fact, Casey, I, before I forget, made the mental note. We should run the Neil Kleinberg conversation from before Thanksgiving last year. We'll throw that into the best of Thursday. So for those of you that are doing your getting ready for your Thanksgiving cooking, and don't think you shouldn't be getting ready. You're talking, you know, it's right on top of us. And in fact, I made the zucchini bread yesterday, and which freezes really well. So I made two loaves of zucchini bread. But get out ahead of it, and so you'll have that conversation that was really terrific. Neil talked about, you know, Neil, of course, Clinton Street Baking Company, not just in the city, but around the world, too, in Dubai and in Singapore and Tokyo, and they've got about a half a dozen Clinton Streets worldwide. But celebrity chef Neil Kleinberg and his Thanksgiving prep, we hit on a few topics. So those of you getting ready for your Thanksgiving cooking, and Tony doesn't have to do any Thanksgiving cooking, I don't think, just maybe some Thanksgiving eating. Tony Black joins us.
Hello, Steve. You're right. I don't have to do the cooking. I'm fortunate enough to have a 93-year-old Greek mother that's just wonderful and a great cook. And all she does is send me to the grocery store. I already got a 20-pound. She said, you get a 20-pounder. And, she said, don't get it yet because I don't want it frozen. I want it fresh, killed 20-pounder. I said,
nice.
All right, Mom, whatever you want. And she puts out a spread. Steve, you can't believe what this lady can put together. If she isn't cooking Greek style, she's cooking American style. And she throws everything together, and it'll be a delicious Thanksgiving dinner. That's on
nice.
A happy note. That is on a
how
happy
many?
Note.
Yeah. How many people? How many at the?
Oh, we got grandchildren coming. I got two grandchildren, Athena and Apollo. Can you believe you'd name your Greek grandchildren Athena and Apollo? What my son, what a guy. Tony named them.
Those are good. Those are good.
They come back from Greece. She had the baby. That was Athena. The next baby she had, that's Apollo. He said, and this kid is something. Like, one's three and the other's one. And this one-year-old, Apollo, he's definitely an Apollo. He was born, he was almost 11 pounds. And he's strong as an ox and smart as a whip, just like his granddad. and then my other son will come with his girlfriend, Mike, and then it'll be my brother, and then it'll be me, and there's always somebody comes. I can remember sometimes I always bring somebody that has no place to go from the racetrack. I can many a year we had one of the people that I work with from the track that was away from home, and they'd be there with us, and they enjoyed my mom's cooking. You know, so it's a wonderful holiday, and gets family and friends together. What else can you ask for?
No, it's a great, Christmas and Thanksgiving, Christmas particularly, very important at the racetrack. But Thanksgiving, and historically, you know, certain racetracks, Laurel, absolutely, and with the pie giveaway, and the fairgrounds, huge Thanksgiving dinner at every year at Famous at fairgrounds.
And it's wonderful because these people, you know, a lot of them don't have homes to go to, and they live at the track. And a lot of them, you know, are away from homes, and they're at the track and can't get home. It's wonderful to see a management and a track association to do something like this. And it's so appreciated. And, you know, these people that take care of these horses, you know, I was one of them guys when I first started out. I know what it is to take care of these horses. A 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job. Somebody's there doing something for these horses. And, you know, hopefully it's appreciated. And, of course, sometimes it's not appreciated, but guys like me see what these backside employees do, and I appreciate them. I appreciate them whether I'm riding, whether I'm getting on horses, whether I'm just walking in the office or around the stable area. I appreciate these people. They're good people.
Well, and on that topic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People that are appreciated. You know, we had a tragedy at Churchill Downs, and I wasn't real familiar with Adonis Acuna, better known as Cuba. And they said he was a great family man, took care of his family, great on a horse's back. I mean, people tell me that knew him somewhere, because there's always somebody that knows somebody, whatever track you're in. If you're in California, they know somebody from Churchill. If you're in Keystone, Philadelphia Parks, they know somebody, or they worked with him. And they said he was just a great employee and good on a horse. Well, he was good working them, gallop them, whatever had to be done. And, it just shows you, they don't park an ambulance out there for show. They don't park an ambulance out there in the morning and the afternoon, because this game doesn't have built-in hazards that we all live with and we accept. He succumbed to a tragedy, a catastrophic injury of a horse, and a tragedy, and was killed. My heart goes out to his family, and my heart goes out to everybody that works at the racetrack. It's a great business, but it has its hazards, and we live with that every day.
Most of us think of ourselves
as invincible. We're invincible, Steve. That happens, and it brings reality to the sport again.
We've had, and I bring the number up with you whenever we are forced to discuss this, and since they started keeping records after World War II, the average has been 2 fatalities a year. And it's as sobering a statistic as there is in the game. And there's been just as many exercise riders that are paralyzed and fatally injured as there are in the afternoon. And in fact, there's obviously more exercise riders on a daily basis that are out there getting on 5, 6, 7 horses every morning. And you had Calderon, right?
Mario Calderon. I was one.
Mario Calderon. There you go.
When he succumbed to an accident, his horse was spooked by some chickens that were at the 3/8 pole. I was at the 3/4 pole. His horse spooked. He got hung up in the irons, and he come getting drug underneath the horse until he humanely got knocked out. But the screaming is in my ears for the rest of my life. But there's accidents in the morning, and of course there's accidents in the afternoon. We lost Jose Flores in March to a riding mishap. The ambulance, like I said, is not parked on the outside fence in the morning for show, and it doesn't follow the field in the afternoon for show. It's there for a reason.
Now, and the infrastructure, Tony, we don't, we only hear bits and pieces, and the community at large, stakeholders and horse players and fans, they always respond to every fundraising campaign that, that comes out. And, knowing that Acuna had the wife and the 3 boys that were literally, on the doorstep of coming to Louisville and joining him in the process of buying a home. I mean, everything that would constitute a wonderful next chapter in a family's life. And if you can't identify with that, and if you can't, frankly, those that have been seemingly immune to the travail of those less fortunate that are trying to carve out a life for themselves and their families, those coming from Central and South America and anywhere else in the world that see this country as a beacon and as a bastion for an opportunity to make a better life, that's what we're based on.
Right.
And I would think that, if anything, this message for those that seemingly have turned their back to that philosophy, knowing that Acuña's wife and three boys were ready to come from Cuba and join him, and that is most likely going to disappear, is to me incredibly poignant and just achingly sad.
Yeah, it definitely is sad, Mike. Like I say, my heart goes out to the children that he won't be the father there that they need. My heart goes out to his family, his wife. You know, it's terrible to lose and be of any age to lose someone so close. You know, when my mother goes home every night, I say, I'll see you tomorrow, Mom. And there'll be a day where I don't see her tomorrow alive. You know, she's 93. I always have to bring up a loss in the business if I can right now.
Of course, that absolutely.
My second father, my very good friend, Walter Reese, succumbed to an accident at home. And I'll tell you the whole story. He fell at 1 o'clock in the morning in the kitchen, banged his head. By the time they got into the hospital, he was going under. And he told them, this was said to me. He said, they asked how the accident happened. He said, I fell off a horse. This is how the business is ingrained into even your last thoughts and words, into who you are as a person. He said he fell off a horse, and he was really good on a horse when he was young days. He was in his 80s, 85, 87, 85. And he was, like I said, a second father to me. And every day I saw him at the track when he came or when he was leaving, I used to kiss him on the cheek. And he wasn't the kind of hugging, kissing guy, you know. But I made sure I kissed him on his cheek every time he was leaving. And I said, see you next time, Walter. I love you. And, over the years, he finally would start saying, I love you too, Tom. And he would laugh when I kissed him on the cheek. And people would see me kiss him on the cheek in the kitchen, in the grandstand, at the dining room, no matter where it was. But, you know, you got to love people like this. When I first got sober, he was one of the first two guys that said, I went to him, I went to K-Mac. I said, listen, I'm really going to try. I just got out of rehab. It's 1991, January. I just got out. I went in December, got out in January, February, whatever it was. I said, I need a chance to ride some horses and prove that I'm not a, well, I said it in different words, that I'm not a screw-up. He says, just come to the bar and get on something, Tom. K-Mac said, I got one picked out for you, first-time starter. She'll run real good first time we run a Toot LeMay, I think her name was a Toot something. I forget the name. Well, anyway, K-Mac put me on the horse to win first or second time I rode it. Walters picked out some horses. They won first time, second time I rode them. And he never listened to the thing that was being said. What are you riding black for? He's gonna be screwing up in no time. As soon as he recovers with some bucks in his pocket, he'll be screwing up. Walter didn't listen to any of that. He put me on horses. I went to the barn. When he got big again, I was right there. You know, I went to the Kentucky Derby. One of the horses went Pennsylvania Derby. It was Cynthia and Walter Reese, you know. And he never listened to that, what are you putting him on horses for? He's a screw-up. I'll never forget one day I rode a race on a horse that he loved. And he was never any pressure to ride for the guy. I was up everybody's ass but my own, rode a horrible race. I know he blowed his money. I come back. That's the one thing he liked. I always talk the truth to him. I said, Walter, I really blowed that one. I really screwed it up. You know what his words were? Didn't walk away with his head down and throw tickets in the air. Nothing. He says, well, maybe you won't next time, Tone. Maybe you won't next time. You know, screw it up. But that's the kind of guy he was. I'll never forget another day I rode a horse when he said, this horse ain't ready to run. Make sure you just get a real easy race into her. We don't want to hurt her. We're going to run her next start, I think, Saratoga. He says, and she's not ready. This race will set her up good. Well, I come to the eighth pole with this not ready son of a gun, and if I don't chirp and drop her head, I'd have gotten a year. And she wins so easy. A horse called Avery Hall. She wins just blowed by him with me sitting there like a bump on a log. And he says, man, he says, couldn't believe you didn't get that one beat. And I said, Walt, if I didn't let this drop her head at the eighth pole, You know, I said she was more ready than you gave her credit for. If I don't drop her head, you'd have been. I'd have been watching the races for the next year. The Stewart would have been me a year. And he goes, okay. Next time we run her up at Saratoga, it's a mile 16th. I think it's a New York Red or some 200,000 it was. I just go past, I think it was Cordero or Valles Greslin, guys, at the eighth pole. I'm going to win for fun. It was a mile 16th race. She got to the track, to the rake marks where the gate was when we started. She hit those. I'm just going to open up on Cordero by a length or two. She went and hit those rake marks, halfway prop, jumped over them, almost fell on her head. Cordero went past me, opened up two lengths at the 16th pole, and I got beat her nose. And I thought, man, here's a sumbitch you thought I would get beat on in an A other than at Philadelphia Park, Philadelphia Park. And she just got beat a nose in a 200,000 at Saratoga. But he was such a good guy to ride for. He always used to say, come to the farm, bring the kids fishing. You know, anytime I had a problem, he went through in sobriety with me, two divorces with me, and rode for him for 35 years. You know, whether it was Cynthia down the strainer or him, because both of them, you know, that was they were lifelong partners. And never say a word like, I need to ride somebody else, or man, you're screwing up. He wasn't a good friend. He was my second daddy. I love the guy. I'm missing. And I'll never forget what he did for me. And I'll never forget sitting with him every morning that he'd come to the track. He was just a great guy.
Yeah, and I really have not seen much of I haven't seen a write-up at all. And, of course, Cynthia still sending horses out, yes?
Yeah. In fact, she had a Jersey bred, Walter. I said, just get on this Jersey bred for me. Your pal. He said, she rode the whole family. And they named the horse Pals, Forever Pals, Always Pals, all kinds of Pals, Okay Pals. This was your Pals. I think it was one of the last horses of Jersey breds out of that mare. And we run it here first time out. She didn't break good. She finished third. Jaywalk beat her. Finished second in the race. Jaywalk, I think. I was third to Jaywalk. Then he says, I said, well, I'm not riding no more, Walt. He says, do me a favor, Tone. Go to Monmouth and ride her in a Jersey bred race, please. I says, how I ever say no to you, Walt? I said, I'm not riding. I have trouble going across the parking lot to get to the jockey in the car. And he says, oh, come on, we'll drive up together. I'll meet you up there. We'll have a good day. So I went up there. She still didn't break real good because she had some issues. And she finished second, just got beat a few lengths, but was second best that day. Then they brought her home. He says, we're going to get this mare, this filly, two-year-old, this filly straightened out, and she'll win you some races. I says, what? You keep telling me to ride these horses. He says, that's because you still can do it. You know? I said, I'm an old guy. Well, I'm old. He says, well, maybe when you're as old as me, you won't be able to do it. And he never missed my birthday, never missed asking what my kids were doing. And like I said, second father, I loved him. It's like if something's missing me coming to the jocks room today. I'm in the jocks room now because I ride the fourth and the seventh for Richie Vega. I says, you only meet guys like him in a career that ride you for 35 years, especially me. I mean, because how many guys felt like everything that I had to say was annoying? he probably had a hearing problem like Richard Vega does, because they never fired me after I got off a horse and told them what I thought. So maybe I knew all the hearing was good, but maybe he was hiding that he had a hearing problem. I said, if only I could have met a wife that had a hearing problem like Richie Vega and Walter Reese, I would have never got a divorce.
Those horses, Tony, and we should touch on the successes that Walter and Cynthia have had. And of course, you won the Pennsylvania Derby with Devil's Honor for them and for the Carpenitos, right? That's the Carpenito.
Yes, Carpenitos. Yeah. And Carpenito had in contention in Devil's Honor. I went out to Remington Park and won a race on the prep to the Oklahoma Derby. And then the Oklahoma Derby, he got banged around and got hurt. He was the horse that should have run in the Kentucky Derby, but he tore his back leg up. The horse next to him really banged the hell out of him and tore him up. It took us all that time to get him back to the races. And then we finally got him back to races and got him started, and then we wound up winning the Pennsylvania Derby with Devil's Honor. We went to the Kentucky Derby with his stablemate, which was nowhere near what he was in contention. But Carpenito walked, especially Carpenito, wanted to send a horse to the Kentucky Derby. I went down there on Tuesday, and I rode on Saturday and had my two younger boys, 1996, Tony and Mike were like 14 and 12 or whatever, and took my mom and Kylie, and we spent Tuesday to Saturday at Churchill Downs and had a box seat, and every day went to the races, watched the Oaks, and Walter was there, and we had such a wonderful time. Didn't run any good in the Kentucky Derby, but it really wasn't supposed to, but we were there. And you think back to even a horse that doesn't run good in the Kentucky Derby. Look, there's riders that never get to the Kentucky Derby, that ride where I rode. And I got there twice, didn't even finish fourth in it one year. But Walter put me on every nice horse he ever had. And like I said, he was the kind of guy that you rode for and you could think and do what you felt like doing, you know, what you feel going on in front of you. You know, I always say I ride by sensation, and what feels like is going on around me and in front of me, I react to. And you never had to worry about Walter. And, well, I want you to be here in the early stages and here leaving the gate and here down the backside. You didn't even get orders. He said, I just go out there and do what you know how to do, Tone. He never gave me orders. He was great, you know. There's not enough guys that you can say that about in this business. But Walter was not just a good person to ride for. He was a very close, close friend, more than a friend, a father.
Well, and you know, Tony, we've got a couple of responses coming in, and you mentioned In Contention, and In Contention was a very good second behind Unbridled Song in the Wood Memorial before coming up to the Derby. And in fact, Rich Migliori came up earlier with Andy Serling, and Richie's new nickname is Farm to Table. And so... Richie was actually fifth in that race with Featherbox. He was behind you, and at one point you passed Featherbox. This was an interesting field that included Smith rode Unbridled Song, of course, but Johnny was on Harrow Man. John Velasquez, by the way, four wins away. We'll bring this up with Todd Pletcher later. Four wins away from 6,000, and. Secreto d'Estado in this race with Dale Cordova and Julie Crone aboard Romano Gucci. And this was an interesting group.
Yeah, and you know, Devil's Honor, like I said, was a stablemate. And he could tow rope In Contention, but we had some setbacks with Devil's Honor. I mean, Devil's Honor in the Pennsylvania Derby beat Formal Gold with Mike Smith.
Yep.
And Mike come to me like he was going to play. He come here and was talking about that to the kids one day. He had them all laughing in the jocks room. He said, I come to black like I was going to blow by him. He takes me out a little bit. Then the stretch drops in and opens up a half a length on me. And I was on Formal Club. These kids were laughing, and Mike's telling the story. You know, it was just some great memories. And Walt made those memories for me. He made those memories for me, you know, we won races in Jersey, stake races in Meadowlands with some homebred Jersey bred, Monmouth Park. And he put me on anything he had that I wanted to ride or any jock would want to ride, he put me on. And he always was 100% confident that I would try to do my best. And when, like I said, you screwed up, he'd say, maybe you won't next time. That was his fun. Maybe you won't next time. And I bet
did
that
you
hit some other time or two that time?
Did you ride Okay By You for him?
I think I rode him near the end of his career. That was a horse he had. That was a Jersey bred too, riding that Jersey. Okay.
He won the Sapling. He won the Sapling when it was a Grade One.
Yeah, I didn't ride him then. I'm not sure if I rode him at the end. He had so many horses. Maybe I didn't ride him. I'd have to look back. I might have ridden him near the end of his career, you know, when he was just about ready to pack it in. I think I
well,
rode him once.
Because that's that family. That's the family you're talking about, the OK Pal family.
Oh, yeah. It's the OK Pals, forever pals, always pals. This one baby, your pals, is the newest. Everyone was a pal horse, and I won races on. And, you know, I used to tell him, these are the quickest son of a guns I've ever sat on leaving the gate. They could be standing sideways in the gate, and they had such quick reflexes, they'd leave there running. One day I went to work forever pals on the turf, and she could run on the turf at Mama's Park. And I used to tell them how quick her reflexes were. Well, they were so quick while I was backing her up on the turf. I was standing on the turf course because she saw something, because you don't get a chance to work a lot of horses on the turf. She saw something. She went left and I went right. And I'm standing there watching her go. So Walt wound up coming down the track and we caught her. Give me a leg up. He says, work her 5/8 of a mile. He was something with horses. But he was a guy that, you know, he had a lot of heart and humanity and loved horses, but he would train them to their limits. And, you know, when they would have little problems, he would treat and put his care in towards the treating of these problems. But I never guess. He used to fuck horses' shins, and he'd say, we got to make sure she don't fuck again. And their shins would be like my fist, just sticking out like my fist on her cannon bone. He'd fire them, take care of them, and they'd come back running. I said, man, when you buck one out, Law, you buck one out. That's what you're supposed to do. You get him over it. You get him over it. But I never forget, he had a horse there one year. He said, I had terrible conformation, but you could run. I can't think of which one it was. And I said, man, she's built horrible. He says, let me tell you something about conformation, Tone. Conformation will never stop them if they can run from running. The only thing it might do is stop them from lasting long, but it'll never stop them from running if they can run. And I had a crooked leg filly one time with my first wife that towed in so bad. I bought her as part of a package deal for my wife. You know, she bought them when she was training. We win 9 out of 13 races with her. And you can look up her history. Her name was The Minority. And I always remember, Walt told me, they can run. You know, conformation won't stop them from running if they can run. They just won't last as long. He was just a great old school, a breath of fresh air at times, horseman. He'd get him there. He would tell you what he knew about him, but he'd never tell you how to ride him.
Yeah, and that is a quality that, you know, that is nice for a rider. It's a partnership, that's an interesting, you know, there's certainly riders that, you know, that are, you look at Wesley Ward and Wayne Catalano. I mean, that's, I always laugh with them because, they no jock can come back and tell them a story, because they've heard it all.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few things about Reese too that will certainly, I don't know if Jim Dunleavy, I'll get a hold of Jim and make sure Jim's aware, of Walter's passing, but, you know, certainly one, not story, but one element of his career and that should come out is Black Tie Affair. He started Black Tie Affair and then sold him.
Mario Vergi rode him. He broke his maiden. Walt knew he could run. He was kind of a tough horse to handle, but Walt liked him. But Walt was the kind of guy, if you take a profit, you'll never have a loss. And anything in his barn was for sale. He sold that horse. That was probably the best horse he ever had. And he sold it because at the time the money he was offered was serious money, that's what he chose to do. You know, there's other horses he sold that never went on to be Black Tie Affairs, but he never begrudged what he did. You know, he said, that's what you're supposed to do. I made money with the horse.
125,000. He sold them for.
Yeah. A lot of money. And what year was that? That was
80.
Yeah, I mean, it was when $125,000 was good money for that type of a horse. And he broke his maiden at Keystone at the time, or Philadelphia Park, I believe it was.
And he won a stake. He won the Malice. He won the Malice stake.
88. Yeah. Yeah, and probably the only reason I didn't ride for him at the time, I was on the verge of my insobriety was heightening. But 1990 was the year I turned it around, and Walt was right there saying, come on over to the barn, get on something. We'll find something right away. And from 91 on, I never never wasn't with him.
Well, Timber Creek Farm, the nom de course, and our hearts go out to Cynthia. And
let me say one thing about Cynthia. When she called me the day that he had fallen and that night and was in the hospital, she called me right away. I was at the hospital that day, you know, and Walt knew I was there. He knew it was semi-unconscious. You know, I kissed him on cheek, told him it was me, and he made these noises like, I know it's you, you asshole. That's all what he said. I, you know, he didn't have to say it, but I knew that's what he was thinking because I kissed him on the cheek, I grabbed his hand, I hugged him. So then he was in the hospital a couple of days, and then Cynthia called me. She said, listen, I'm going to bring him home, and we'll have hospice at the farm. If you can get out here to see him, get out here.
Yeah.
And then I was going out the next day, but he died that day. But I did get the chance to see him, and it was just, he knew Steve. When he made these noises, they were like, yeah, I know it's you, Tony. I know. He made it, and I was just so glad that she called me. And I give her so much credit for doing what he wanted done. He was going to die at the farm, and he did. And you know, he was one of those kind of guys, he didn't want all that burial stuff, nothing. They cremated him the next day. She said that he didn't want no service, no nothing. I said, well, I wanted to see if he wanted a service. You know, I want to be there. And she said, he doesn't, but we're going to have something at the track for him. You know, family and friends can come one day. She said, because then he can't stop us because he'll be at the track watching the races with us. I surely will miss him, Steve. I love that guy. I love him.
Tony, I appreciate it, and absolutely wanted you to talk about him. And the people have been betting on the Reese's horses for years, and they'll continue to. Cynthia still sending out.
Thank you for letting me have this time, because I know you were one of the people that knew how much he meant to me. And I'm so glad you fit me in today, because we're not going to be on Thursday. And thank you so much, Steve.
Not at all, Tony. It was tremendous. Walter Reese, and everybody appreciate, and I'll make sure that I want to make sure that Jim Dunleavy gets something into the form, because it's the best way to communicate around wider. And I'll put up a thing today, too. I got a nice picture from him. And, of course, a member of the Parks Hall of Fame with over 1,500 wins under his name. And then Cynthia's got another. She's got to have 1,000 wins.
Got to, yeah. We've been together a lot of years, you know. But I wrote steady for him, other than a few years on and off because of my actions. In 35, 40 years, I wrote steady for him for 30 years, since 1991. What's that, 29, 30? I don't know. My math is
terrible.
27.
There you go.
And wrote for him before that. He put up with me. All right, Steve. I love you. Thank you.
Tony, love you too. I appreciate it. And I know Richie listening, and anybody else that knows what racetrack life and this kind of an association and relationship. And I appreciate, everybody appreciates Tony's just heartfelt thoughts on every topic, not just things like this, but on everything that we talk about every week with Tony Black. Let's take a break here. Dick Powell is going to join us for a few minutes. I want to get Dick's recapping of Breeders' Cup from his perspective, and knowing that, you know, of course, Dick and I have done the last couple of years, we've done Presque Isle topics with you, and Presque Isle with another Breeders' Cup success, unbelievable. And this was a Pennsylvania bred race. It wasn't even the Masters. It was the Malvern Rose. Unbelievable. Shamrock Rose, we talked about with Mark Cassie yesterday, which was really fun. We'll talk to Todd Pletcher, too, in about 20 minutes, but we'll spend these next 20 with Dick Powell. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here. And I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.